Hi, I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the Citadel.
This is the Radical Geek signing off, but coming up next is Nutty Bites, with your geek queen, Nutty Nuchas, and her upside-down and flying co-host, Tech. So sit back, enjoy, and don't touch that dial on your podcatcher.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases, this is Nuchas, and we have part two of our Star Trek Disco review, in-depth analysis. With me, as always, I have...
Hi, I'm Tech.
And we have a guest for part two. We have our good friend, Mark Cabot.
Hi, I'm here again.
And,
You're here still.
Still. Well, yeah. He's been hiding out in the recording ever since Star Trek Discovery Part 1. Yes, so we're going to be talking about Season 2. We finished watching Season 2, and we've watched two of the shorts. We didn't watch all four of them. And so before we get into, like, full-on initial thoughts, Tech, your initial thoughts on Season 2.
Initial thoughts on Season 2 is that they watched that, Impossible Astronaut series of Doctor Who one too many times and then decided to trek it up a bit.
True.
My initial thoughts, season one was an abusive spouse and season two is that spouse trying to apologize to me.
I can see some of that. I really enjoy bringing on Christopher Pike. I think that really... It started to really feel like Trek, and it started to feel like Starfleet, and I felt that was really cool. We do get a little more of the bridge crew, not enough. I'm excited to where things are going. I'm gonna say that I enjoyed the season, and I'm definitely excited for season three.
I'm gonna try to... I mean, you mentioned a little while ago in one of your podcasts about yucking people's yums, and I know a lot of people love Star Trek Discovery, and I don't want to sound like I'm ragging on it too much here, because there are some things that I just enjoyed so much about it. The cinematography, the effects, all top rate. Like, this is the kind of stuff you see in full budget movies.
Yeah, it was big budget Trek without all of the problems that occur when they try to make Star Trek movies, because let's be honest, they're mediocre at best. There's not too many really good Trek movies.
No, there isn't.
They're pretty bad.
Well, I mean, the one with the whales.
So Star Trek IV is the best of them all. But they're as a rule, the Trek movies are pretty horrid, but they've all got these big budgets. And the fact that they put that big budget into a TV show was kind of cool. The special effects, like you said, the cinematography. Now, on the cinematography, the shaky cam work in some cases was a little distracting. Like, why is it that whenever two characters are in a heated discussion, the best point of view is orbiting around them continuously for 2 minutes while they have this discussion?
Yeah, that strange over-the-shoulder orbit kind of thing.
Yeah.
They've really pulled back on that since season one. Season one, especially the two-parter opener of season one, it felt like you were in a bad dream the entire time, the way they did the camera work, and I couldn't figure out what was going on there. And it's still kind of sticking around. They don't have those nice, wide, establishing shots. Like, even to this day, I have a hard time picturing exactly how that bridge is laid out.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, you think of Star Trek, any of the other Star Treks, you know. Although, you know, even Voyager, it's not very clear. TNG really had that nice, wide, open feel to the bridge.
Yeah.
But sticking with things that I kind of really loved about Star Trek Season 2, they did try to move forward with a lot of things that they just got wrong in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of the problems are... I'm going to get into that later. I just need to put this aside for a second. Talk nice about it. The bridge of the original Enterprise, the remake of it.
Oh,
I mean, you only see it once towards the end of the season, but
that was awesome.
The decking, like when they go into the lower decks and just the hallways. I wish they'd also gone to engineering or the sick bay or a couple of the other rooms that we know from the show, but it was modernized just enough, but yet still historically accurate to the show from the 60s. I thought it was done. Yeah, you're right. It was done absolutely awesome.
It felt like it was done with somebody with a real love of the material.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, thank you know, at least we're over JJ. You know, I think we're finally starting to correct those errors. I had a lot of fun with it. To me, it really felt like Star Trek again. I was willing to, you know, suspend my disbelief. I don't know. I know I don't want to start saying bad things yet. I'll just say that it really did feel like Star Trek for all the good and bad that that brings. And there was a lot for me to like, and I like that they really expanded their cast of characters to include more of the major characters. And, you know, they gave us, you know, they gave us a couple Millie episodes. They gave us, you know, Tilly. They gave us some episodes with Arium. They gave it, and we finally learned her name. And they gave us some Saru episodes and all the rest of it. You know, the Doctor and Stamets. And we got to know more about these people, except the Black Girl.
Yeah.
No Owoshikun
episode. We need more Owoshikun. Well, we got a little bit of her when they went down to the planet, and then she talked about how her family were Luddites. And then there's, like, nothing about her until the end when she's saying goodbye to her family, and it's so sad. And she's like, if anyone ever is willing to listen to this. Because it's technology. Her family, they're from a Luddite
community. Oh, right, yeah.
They don't want to listen to it, and that's so sad.
But there's a scene in one of the episodes where it's, who's the other, the bridge girl with the artificial eye?
Detmer.
Yeah, so it's Detmer, Arium, Owoshikun, and Tilly.
Yeah.
All hanging out being girls, and they're being like super girls. They're like giggly, and they're just, they're not being officers at this point. They're just being girls. And I thought that that was so refreshing to see in Trek, and so refreshing to see the human side of these characters other than, you know, these military officers. Yeah. And they never revisited that.
Yeah.
And
we got a peek of that in season one with the awesome time episode. Yeah, at the party.
Oh. Yeah.
And I want more of that. And there's like this one scene in season two where Tilly's like, I can do it, but I have to do it with my eyes closed because I only did it during a dare while drunk.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want more of that.
and this is, I think, there's a crux of a problem that exists in this particular Star Trek, and it has to do more with the writing. The actors are fantastic. Every single one of them. I don't think I could say anything. I don't think I have a problem with any one of the actors that are in here.
Yeah.
But they're kind of they're fighting an uphill battle with some of the scripts they're being handed. And I think a lot of this comes down to, I would give you a quick little assignment after you're done here. Go find the intro to Star Trek and count how many names of the actors that they put on the screen, and then count how many producers they put on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Almost 75% of the intro is producer credits. There are 21 producer credits.
Oh my
in the
goodness!
Intro.
Wow.
I counted them before.
Yeah, that's top heavy.
Exactly. That's very, very. There's a problem here, and they're adding more to it. So this is a bit of a problem, and I think this comes across in the storyline because the storyline takes so many hard lefts throughout the season. Like, it's starting in one direction, and it just kind of goes into another direction, and then it stops and goes into another direction. So we have this – and then you have this – you need to tie it all up at the end. So we have Control, which just kind of appeared. We have this database that's kind of self-sentient in some weird way. And then we have what's going on with the mycelial network and all the stuff like that. You got to try to tie it in together at the end. And it's kind of, they ended up doing a bit of a clumsy job of it.
And one part of this, we bring everything together. It comes from like their web series thing that unless you were told you should have gone and watched that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that about?
Yeah, I think that a series should stand up on its own merits, and that if you're going to have, you know, companion pieces that they should add, you know, if you're going to have a little companion web series that goes on with your thing or a tie-in comic book or whatever, that's great that it adds more, but it shouldn't be required.
Yeah.
That the TV show, the comic book, the whatever should stand on its own, and if I choose to put them all together to sort of expand my my depth in this world, that's fine, but don't expect me to read your book and watch the play and listen to the music soundtrack and, you know.
Well, and the thing that bugs me the most about that, all right, so we're talking about the Queen, Poe, that Tilly is friends with from that short. And the thing that drives me nuts about that is I watched the short after the fact, and first off, if that was the first of the shorts, I wouldn't keep watching based on that, because it wasn't that great. That could have been thrown in as a C or a D plot in any one of those episodes.
Yeah, it was a 13-minute thing. They could have put that in as a C plot or a B plot somewhere, and it would have been fine.
And it would have been more interesting because it would have been broken up, whereas it just kind of felt like we're really setting this up just so that we can have this awesome character in the finale.
So this was a thought I had earlier today, and it goes back to what you're saying, Mark, about the quality of the writing. Okay, so yeah, the writing is problematic, and that there are some problems of plot and of character development and pacing, and just some of it feels, I don't know, it feels weird and it feels bad. And there's a couple episodes that just fell absolutely flat and left me with more questions than answers, and I got very, very frustrated. I got very frustrated at least once an episode with, but they've already established this rule and now they're breaking it. Or they've already established that technology works this way and now they're forgetting it. Or, you know, there's a scene near the end where they only have an hour and they keep saying, I've only got an hour. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then one character goes off and comes back with their parents. Yeah. And another character goes off and comes back with his wife, their kid, and an entire Starfleet of ships. See, like, you managed to make it all the way to Kronos and back in an hour. You don't have the mycelial network. How did you do it? That's just sloppy writing.
Yep.
They could have written anything they wanted to add those characters in, but they chose to break the rules that they've established.
Well, and the beginning of the season, they're like, oh, I need to pretend that I killed Ash and that my child is dead. And if anyone sees that Ash is alive again, it's going to make the entire Klingon Empire collapse. But let me come in on this giant Klingon ship.
Yeah, but Ash is like, hold on a minute, got to go home for a sec.
Yeah, but like the entire crew sees that Ash is there. And not only is Ash there, he's giving orders.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Sup, bae. thanks for bringing the ship, boo. But the big issue that I had with this, the realization I had today when we were doing laundry was, I guess that makes it, with the problematic writing, I guess that truly means it is Star Trek. Because let's remember, Star Trek's writing has always been problematic. You know, as Fry talks about Futurama, it's like, remember the original series, 76 episodes, about 30 good ones. And, you know, for every Cage, there's a Spock's brain.
Yeah, for every Guardians of Forever...
Yeah, and for every there's
Plato's children.
There's a Plato's children, and you know, even in Next Generation.
Ugh, don't walk on the grass, Wesley.
Okay, don't walk on the grass, Wesley. But okay, remember that for every there are four lights, there's a Casino Royale.
Ooh.
Okay, remember that Voyager had an episode that was so bad it was struck from canon, where they turned the characters into giant space salamanders.
Yeah.
Let's remember that DS9.
Skinnamarinkadinkadink.
No, that's Ponomarain.
Oh, well.
Ponomarain, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you give us the Dominion War. You give us a 7-part finale, one of the greatest things to ever be in sci-fi. But remember, you've got Ponomarain. So, Trek writing has always been spotty.
Yeah.
Yep.
But it felt really egregious in a couple places in this.
And I really think that with all those producer credits, like, they really screwed up because they were supposed to credit Stephen Moffat. Because Burnham is the magical companion, essentially.
Well, I mean, they're still in litigation for ripping off the whole season one story arc from a video game.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, there's a independent game on Steam that has it's a video game about a giant space, what are they called? The little creature.
Tribbles?
No. It's,
Tardigrades?
Tardigrade, yeah. Oh, okay. It's about a big space tardigrade that can, take people through a, network of, space spores. Anywhere instantly in, across the universe, and has a cast that's strikingly similar to the cast in Star Trek Discovery. Like almost exactly, and it's almost beat for beat the same story. And from what I understand, they're kind of losing it. They're losing the litigation. But I don't know where that's at or what's going on with that.
Is this just a coincidence that the two are similar, or do you think that there was something you think that there's some actually nefarious?
I mean, it's was it CBC? NBC? Is it NBC?
CBS.
CBS's position is that it was coincidental, and I think that was been pretty much debunked because it's too close to be coincidental. Mm. And then now they're saying that it's I don't know what the exact name of the argument, but they're basically saying that it's just standard narrative stuff for a space. You know, you can't say your show is like mine because it has a spaceship and mine has a spaceship. All sci-fi shows have spaceships. You can't make that argument.
Right.
But it's a space tardigrade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's very specific.
A mycelial network of intergalactic space fungi navigated by space tardigrades is pretty specific.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not exactly like that's being done a whole lot. And the only guy who can navigate it is a blonde guy who is married to, who's involved in a gay marriage to a black guy who is a doctor. Like that specific. In the characters, it's so close.
Latino, but yes.
Yeah, sorry, Latino.
Yeah. What, you didn't watch CSI Tardigrade?
So I found out something. I don't know if we mentioned this in part one, that Paul Stamets is a real person.
Yeah, he's a real myconologist.
Yeah. That
really?
You can listen to his TED Talks about spores and everything. Yeah, they named him after that doctor, that current doctor, as an homage.
Oh, that's nice.
Isn't that neat?
I'm happy with Discovery. Let's remember how good. Hey, Mark, do you remember the Next Generation season 2?
Yeah, that was going to be my next point. Season 2. And yeah, I
We had
when we were in season 2 of Next Generation, we were kind of spoiled because we didn't know how good it could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At that point, the only reference we had was the original series.
And Next Gen was so different.
And it was so different. You know,
season 1 was good but problematic, and season 2, you know, trying to take my nostalgia glasses off here, you know, some of the episodes in the first couple of seasons, you know, Riker abandoned on a planet full of Ferengi and
Was that the one where he goes, anybody?
I hate that so much. Let's not forget that they ended season 2 during a writer's strike, so the last episode of season 2 is a clip show.
Yeah, and a bad one.
Bad one because it's Riker going through his memories, so they just clipped the episodes of the first season. Ugh. But it's pretty horrid. Maybe this Discovery season 2 is like TNG season 2. We'll see what happens with season 3. I can't wait to see it. I'm hopeful. I think it'll be good. I think the resolution they chose at the end, and trying not to spoil anything.
Well, are we going with spoilers on this one?
Yeah, we're gonna the spoilers happening now.
Yeah, okay. Spoilers, okay. Right, meow. Okay, meow. So deciding to shove themselves, you know, 700 and something years into the future to sort of escape all of the technology that they forgot they weren't supposed to have because of crappy writing.
Yeah.
So, okay, this is going to take place before the Enterprise's 5-year journey from the original series. Right. Okay, Captain Pike is going to be on it. Awesome, but he's not beeping in a chair yet. Oh, okay, cool. So it's the cool Captain Pike. Wicked. Yeah,
I have a resolution for all this, by the way, which we can talk about in a little bit.
But they have a space mushroom hyperspace network that allows them to go anywhere instantaneously, even faster than warp. And they have better weapons, and they have a better ship, and they have a better this, and they have holographic things, and they have all of these things that are so much better than it was in the original series. If you're going to do a show set in the past of your world, you know, you're handcuffing yourself to a set of rules. If you don't want to play within those rules, that's fine. But if it took 2 seasons to get them to jump 900 years into the future so that the ship can do what it wants, why didn't they just start there? We would have all said, okay.
I'm right there with you. One of the biggest problems is, and I think it's Michael Piller or Rick Berman, one of them, said there's no new stories to tell in the Star Trek future universe.
Yes, there are.
And there are. There are so many stories, and we will get them.
And if you're going to go into the past, You already have established canon that tells you that certain people look like this. Certain ships look like this.
And I don't mind them modernizing it a little.
No.
Like when we see the D7s.
The D7s look great.
The old models, but they look great.
But where did those other ships come from? And okay, so they have the D7s that look accurate. Why don't the Borels look accurate?
Yeah.
Well. Why is there only ever one Borel on a planet?
Yeah.
And why do we never get to and all the other ships just look so crazy and whacked out?
I know. I know that they said that the Klingons were Giger influenced.
Sure.
And
no, I can
and they
see
were
that.
Trying to go for that, but it to the, me, and I still believe, and I said this in the last episode where we talked about Disco, they could have just created a different race. It didn't have to be the Klingons. They could have made a whole other race, and we could have even ended up with a resolution where, yeah, those people are gone because of this war.
But if you wanted to say that, you know, those Klingons were the religious extremists that, you know, were following that one guy and they went off and they made their own ships and they're different than everybody else's because they're not part of the KDF and they don't have access to the ships of the defense fleet. They had to go make their own and they've, you know, this is what they've made. Okay, fine. That would have taken 3 seconds.
Yep.
They didn't do that.
Yeah.
And the one big niggle, I know we talked about it last time and I'm going to bring it up again. They have a character. His name is Spock. We have an established storyline for this character. We know things about this guy. How come no one ever at all in 2 seasons has mentioned his brother?
Yeah.
Where's
what
Cybok?
About Cybok? I'm so confused.
Oh, I'm so grateful to have you for a sister and you're so cool. Uh-huh. Where's your brother?
He forgot about him the same time he forgot about his sister, I guess.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know what? I'm looking him up because maybe he was born after.
But you
he
know,
a half brother.
Yes. The other thought I had the other day, and I'm trying to find a way to word this appropriately. Do you think that the close relationship he had with his sister, the fact that you know there was so much genuine affection between him and his sister, that the respect that he had for her is why in the original series and in the movies he ends up dating Uhura? So she's the she's the only other black girl in space. I think I like her.
Okay.
If I were to accept that, I would have to accept the fact that he's dating her based on her race. And
yeah.
I would like to think that he sees more in Uhura than that. Like, Uhura was one of the... I mean, she was just such a strong character. And I would like to think that that's what he was attracted to. But... at the same time, okay, I have a theory that kind of fixes all of this.
Okay.
And it makes it more palpable for me. It fixes a lot. So we know how there's a split in the timeline. There's this thing called the Kelvin universe. It happens after Discovery, because it happens right around the time that the handover of the Enterprise is given to Kirk, which is a little bit later than Discovery. So at this point, we haven't... The timeline has not split yet. Yet, there is...
Well,
still,
no, the timeline would have split because it splits when Kirk is being born.
Okay.
It's the Constitution that gets attacked, and it's George Kirk.
So the timeline split would be happening somewhere around this time, maybe a little bit before, maybe a little bit after. But it still doesn't explain the fact that the universe still looks so different than it should. There's holograms instead of view screens, you know. And they have technology that they clearly shouldn't. I mean, there's one scene where they deploy something in the cargo bay for catching that meteoroid, which is just this thing they put down and it transforms out into this big, huge, like a big Iron Man suit almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have a cyborg bridge officer. A full cyborg with, it's a brain in a robot suit.
So are you guys familiar with Enterprise at all? Did you ever watch that series?
Yes, I've recently finished watching the entire thing.
And you watched the movies, the TNG movies.
Oh, yes, we've seen
First Contact, I think what happened is there's another timeline split way before these. And it happens, and I can confirm it too, it happens in the movie First Contact. So this is when they go back in time with the Borg and they have a fight right around the first warp drive, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
So we know that a few Borg get left behind because later on in an episode or two of Enterprise, they find these Borg frozen in the Arctic.
Yep.
They saw one out in the typical way that one does.
Yep.
And it tries to assimilate the Enterprise. And at the end of the episode, they turn over the board to, drum roll please, Section 31.
Yeah.
Right. So this is where the big timeline split happens. I mean, arguably the big timeline split happens in the movie First Contact.
So what you're saying is
it's
not a Red Matter universe. It's a First Contact universe.
It's a First Contact universe, to which the Red Matter universe splits off of later on.
Which means so, our original Trek is still there.
It's completely intact, yes. But it's the thing is, the technology would have advanced much slower in the Prime timeline.
Yeah.
Because in this First Contact timeline, it got accelerated when that Borg unit was handed over to Section 31, which would also explain why Control had very Borg-like ways of assimilating human beings under their control. Because it's based on Borg technology.
And it would explain why everybody in Starfleet knows what Section 31 is and black badges, because in Enterprise and Deep Space Nine, nobody knows that Section 31 even exists.
So
exactly. They would have risen to prominence much quicker because of their contributions in the technology and in the defense of Starfleet. So we get a universe that we have holographic imaging way before they would have had it in the Prime timeline. They have these bridges of even the original Enterprise. The bridge looks much more advanced because it was same designers, but with much more advanced technology at their disposal.
So I like this theory. Mm-hmm. I have a big problem with it, though. I think you're giving the writers way too much credit.
I definitely am.
This is fixing the writer's mistake.
But and the other thing is that if they had sat around the writer's room and come up with this, they would have hit us over the head with it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so hard to make us never forget it. That, yo, we thought about this, and this is how we're fixing it, because this is the First Contact universe, and, you know, here's a clip of Zefran Cochrane aboard the Phoenix, and this is, you know, the Borgs buried under the ice, and la 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 la. They would have gone through all of that.
If we're coming up with headcanon, I'm sure many of my listeners have heard me say before that the best headcanon I have for TNG is Picard is Wesley's real father. Beverly knows it, and Picard knows it. And it makes all those early seasons better, because when Picard is all awkward and uncomfortable around Wesley, it makes perfect sense because he's his real dad.
Shut up, Wesley.
And everything works. And then the special interest he takes and how everybody thinks he's so special, because it's the freaking captain's kid. And that makes it all better.
I would like that to be one of the big reveals in the new Picard series.
Oh, my God. That would be so amazing. So I have one of those for Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Cabot's way of fixing our timelines.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing is, so Empress Georgiou and her relationship with Michael Burnham,
which makes no sense,
takes a weird twist in season two, because she goes from being like hating her and wanting to destroy everything to wanting to save her and having very visceral reaction to Michael risking her life. So I've changed it. It's not that she was her adoptive mother in the Mirror Universe. No. Georgiou and Michael were lovers in the Mirror Universe. Nice. And that makes the tension that Georgiou has with Ash even more cool. And there's actually a triangle going on between Georgiou, Michael, and Ash.
Mm.
Once I came up with that theory, all of a sudden, all the scenes just worked so much better.
In the Mirror Universe, geez, would it be a triangle or would it just be a straight-up threesome?
Yeah, well,
yeah.
There in the Mirror Universe, Georgiou.
Welcome to the Mirror Universe, where everything is awful, everything is horrible, everybody kills everybody, but we all do it sexy.
I will say one of my favorite things is when she sees the tension between Hugh and Stamets, and she's like, oh, I want in on that, and she messes with them. That, to me, was so much fun.
I have another little bit of headcanon that I wanted to throw in there.
Sure.
The sphere with all the knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would like it to be from this, in some relation to the probe from the
V'ger.
Fourth movie.
Yeah, V'ger.
Yeah. I had total V'ger thoughts when I saw it.
I was really hoping it was going to be V'ger.
Yeah.
V'ger or also there's that probe from Star Trek 4.
The one that came looking for the whales.
The one that came looking for the whales.
Huh. That'd be really cool if they could figure something out there.
I would also like, I don't know. I mean, we know it has been confirmed canon that V'ger was modified by the Borg.
Yes.
And then sent back to Earth. That's the first movie. But we know they don't make contact with the Borg until that episode of
TNG.
TNG, was it season three? Three or four. Anyway.
I thought it was like one.
No.
Okay. Anyway.
No, because we have to go through Pulaski. It's after Pulaski. It's after anybody! And those garbage episodes. Oh,
so, I just discovered something that I did not realize. So, let's first talk about Captain Pike.
Yes.
The dreamiest Starfleet captain that ever...
This entire show, and all of the mistakes in the writing and everything, the success of the show, in my eyes, rested entirely on the shoulders of... One, the acting performance and the pretty decent writing surrounding the character of Pike. Obviously, he was written with love.
Mm-hmm.
He was written by somebody who understands military men and who understands leadership. Because the way that he trusts his people, the way that he treats his subordinates, the way that he just is the coolest captain ever.
Oh, he's so great. All right, so my answer to favorite captain has changed.
It's now Pike.
It is. I want to serve under Pike.
Many people have changed that. And you know what? There's one scene in particular that I wanted to mention involving Pike. And it kind of brings together... It was a big breath of fresh air for me in this entire series. When he first comes onto the bridge and he needs to put in his command handprint or something like that. And he kind of plays with Tilly.
Yep.
You know, he puts his hand down and she moves it and he goes, ow! And she gets all, you know,
flustered,
worried for a second and flustered. And he just kind of smiles at her. And it was like a father-daughter moment that just highlighted his character so perfectly for me. I just loved that scene.
I felt that the reputation of Pike was well-earned in Discovery. Because you always hear about how Pike was amazing, and there's that one episode in the original series when he comes back and Spock's going through all this, like, turmoil about how he's you know, devoted to Pike. And but we actually get to see why. And he does not disappoint. There is never a time when I think that Pike is disappointing. And he has his flaws and his frailties. I mean, when he touches that time crystal and he sees his future... And he's like horrified. He's like, and he has to actually, he doesn't just go, oh no, I'm going to do it anyway. He has to talk himself into it. He has to give himself a pep talk.
Okay. My headcanon, none of this actually happened. Those time crystals are actually a form of Klingon LSD. And the rest of the show that happened is just them rampantly hallucinating.
All right.
Well, that would solve a lot of problems.
Wouldn't it? Season 3 is going to open and they're like all in bed or something. You know, they pushed all the couches together in like 10 forward to make like a giant sex bed. And they're all just sort of like, whoa, like where have I been? Oh, like 6 weeks went by.
So
somebody ate Saru.
Oh, no. But I do want to say that I want to serve under Captain Pike. And yes, I mean that in both ways.
Yeah, you want to do something under Pike. Yeah,
oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I was avoiding the joke for the sake of the PG rating a while ago.
No. Well, we can make, you know, teenagers have urges. It's all fine. But he is dreamy. He is so dreamy. But what I just discovered is, number one, who I'm like, number one is amazing. She is perfect. I want to see a whole series with her. I didn't realize that was Rebecca Romijn.
Oh, wow. No, never noticed.
It's Mystique.
As number one.
Yeah. I'm waiting for Cabot to respond.
This is a revelation for me.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Like, just change her hair to brown and suddenly I don't realize it's her.
Yeah, and her skin wasn't blue.
I'm not one to recognize actors very well. It's more of the performance that I remember. Mm-hmm. But... Jeez, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
She did an amazing job. And yes, I do want to see more. And according to some things that were leaked during San Diego Comic-Con, we are apparently the Trek shorts for this coming season are going to be on the Bridge of the Enterprise.
Oh, that's good.
Well, that's good. Makes me really happy. We're going to get to see Gregory Peck's son again. We're going to get to see Anson Mount again and Rebecca Romijn.
There was one other little extra that you showed me the other day that was a little thank you that they did for the fans.
Yes.
One of the things that's kind of cool about this is that a lot of these actors are already established and have established careers. So the guy that plays Stamets is a incredibly popular, very well known, very successful Broadway actor. He was
from
in
Rent.
He was in Rent. Same thing with the doctor. His husband is
Wilson Cruz from My So-Called Life and a bunch of other things.
Right, another hugely popular musical actor, and so they did a little thank you for the fans, where they did one of the big songs from Rent on the bridge of the Discovery. And the thing that was really funny about it was they had four characters coming out of the turbo lift, and they're all singing this song in individual parts, and then they harmonize at the end. The guy playing Stamets, what's his name? Is that him?
Yeah.
Anthony Rapp.
Yep.
Okay, that boy can sing, and he can sing really well because he's a musical stage actor. This is what he does. The girl playing Tilly cannot sing at all.
Not to that level. No.
And not to any level. And then they try to hit a four-point harmony with two of those 4 points being quite flat. Yeah. It is painful.
So Jones can sing.
Yeah, and Doug Jones can sing very, very well.
And Anthony Rapp sings well. I think part of the issue is that they had two of the female voices going really, really high, and I'm not sure that that was right for those voices.
It was obviously something done impromptu.
Yeah.
And it was something done...
And they changed the lyrics, and it was basically an ode to the fans.
Yeah, and the whole point of the song is that the only reason we're here is because of nerds.
Yeah.
And we want to thank the nerds, because we're all nerds too, and we wanted more Star Trek, and now we're getting more Star Trek, and it's thanks to the nerds. And it was super cute, awful, horrible. I believe the word, the fancy $3 word is cacophony.
Apparently, a lot of people hated it. I loved it.
It was cute. It was bad. The problem is that the song was horrid because they can't sing. But it was a cute nod to the fans, and thank you very much for doing it. I'm trying to figure out how I think about Discovery. And the other character that just showed up out of nowhere and sort of took over the whole show. But the actress is Tig Notaro.
Thank you for having Tig Notaro.
The engineer.
Jet.
The Star Wars name. Jet something.
Hang on. I'll get the character's name. Everybody's screaming at their headphones right now.
Yeah, I know. And I knew it just before I actually...
But she is incredibly funny. I love the deadpan and just the constant cutting down of Stamets. I mean, it was so, so funny.
That has got to be Scotty's cousin or something, you know?
It felt like she should have been on there more. It's like she disappeared for a while, and I was kind of wondering where the heck she was.
Jet Reno.
What's that?
Jet Reno.
Jet Reno. Yeah, okay. There's a few things that I really wish... There's a few missteps here, and I think it really comes down to the fact the writers didn't really know their audience. Like you say in that musical that, you know, they're talking to the nerds, but you have to understand that when you write this show, you're doing it for the nerds, and the nerds are not the kind of people where you can just throw out these plot twists and plot devices for the sake of having them there without us thinking about it a little bit. And unfortunately, there's a lot of these things that kind of fall apart when you think about them for even just a few moments, and I've highlighted a few of those here. The things that really broke me out of, because when you get into these shows, you like to be in the universe, you like to be part of it, but there's certain things that kind of break you out of the narrative, and it makes the ride a little bit rougher. The way they treated Tilly's character, I thought was a little unfair. They turned her into too much of a punchline this season. The actress who's playing, like, before, the jokes that she came up with were situational. She'd introduce some kind of levity into a situation that was pretty tense, but she had a reason for being there. This season, it felt like she would just kind of walk in the bridge, do something kooky, and then walk off. And there was never any real good development of her character or allowing her character to really to express herself in any meaningful way. She was there as a punchline. I felt like that was a little bit unfair to her character. I think they found that, oh, this actress is funny. Let's get some funny out of her. Yeah, but her character is still a wonderful character that deserves to be explored. And I thought that was shortchanging her a little bit.
We didn't see a lot of Michael and Tilly together like we did in season one. Season one, their bond was important.
Yeah.
And in this season, it really wasn't. There's one moment when they're having a conversation and Michael basically ends up helping her, but it's all about, well, you know you're not crazy. And it was that friendship that was really important. And a lot of that wasn't happening throughout the rest of the season. And it's like, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even her interaction, because she felt like the glue that was holding mm-hmm. that group of girls together.
Absolutely.
That Tech mentioned earlier. And you know, I have that problem with the whole bridge crew. There was a little bit of introduction. I really didn't like it when they introduced Arium.
And then killed her off.
because I knew you care about her just to kill her. Yeah, I knew almost immediately when that episode started and it was centering around her. Mm-hmm. Oh, she's dead.
Yeah.
You know, they don't do this for anybody else. She's dead.
So what do they do? Like they give us a super cool, super confident, super, you know, strong female character and they Tasha Yard her.
Yep.
Basically, yeah. 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 And you know, it's just it really hurt because there's for a season and a half I keep seeing her in the background of the bridge, and she just looks interesting.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, tell me more about that. Her. Tell me more about that cyborg. And it was one of those things. It's like, I want to know about that robot that's in the back because I didn't think we had androids until Data. And then, you know, one of the nerds always go, well, she's not an android. She's a cyborg. It's like, yeah, but I don't know that because they haven't talked about her yet.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem. When Tilly stands up in the middle of a group of people and says, that's the power of math, people,
yeah.
And gets a big standing ovation of applause, that is clearly the writers trying to appease the nerds. But you're flying on a starship. Don't tell me that people are going to be impressed about – it's not even a star – it's a research ship because that's what Discovery originally was.
But there's a – there's a couple problems with Star Trek physics. There always have been the same problems, and I love that they keep making the same mistakes. The two that I will come up with, and I'm glad this was included in Discovery. Why is it that all of the major high-voltage power lines that run the starship are routed through bridge consoles? Basically giant televisions. But they take a, you know, their spaceship gets shot in, like, the aft end, and half the bridge explodes, you know, in a giant shower of sparks.
Yeah.
Why do you have 800-volt mains going through your TV on the bridge? I don't know. It seemed like a thing to do.
EPS conduits are not a good idea.
No.
There was the scene where they were on the Section 31 ship trying to, and they were fighting the control guy. And I remember all the consoles, they're shooting at each other and they're hitting consoles and it's just going, you know, sparks everywhere. We're like, ah, damn those consoles.
Another thing, I understand that they're a mystery that continues to baffle everyone. No one knows how magnets work, but apparently neither do the writers.
Yeah.
They get, you know, when they get the guy full of nanobots and they put him into the chamber and she goes, no, it's okay. He can't get out. I magnetized the chamber to kill the nanites. And he's looking at her and he howls and he roars and he screams and then he falls over dead and this like black sand of nanites just sort of like falls out of his face. That's not how magnets work. If he should have been ripped apart.
Right.
As you know, this magnetic field of nanites, you know, like when you pass a, you know, everybody does that thing when you pass a magnet under a sheet of paper that's covered in iron filings and the iron filings, you know, they make the shape of the magnetic field. We should have seen that in nanites ripping out of his skin.
You see, I think a lot of the problems that they had with that kind of thing this season, they could have solved just by having a scientist on the writing staff. He would have mentioned that. He would have mentioned, or she would have mentioned, The fact that, you know, if there are five, if there are X number of red lights appearing across the galaxy, you're not going to see them all at the same time.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. He would have mentioned, or she would have mentioned, the fact that when Jet Reno in engineering stopped and said, nobody move, there's 100 giga electron volts running through these panels. Because
that's,
you know,
that's not a lot.
It's not a lot, because, but the word electron volt is so much cooler than volts. But when you say electron volts, that
the voltage of an individual electron in an atom.
What, there's 100 giga electron volts is equal to, and I did the conversion. Yeah. You could just get a Google calculator to do it for you. Yeah. 0.2 microcalories.
So nothing.
Nothing. they would have gotten nothing.
So, another one that boggles my mind, because it was a big one in TNG, was they always talk about tachyons. Okay, so tachyons are theoretical particles that always move faster than the speed of light. So wouldn't an inverted tachyon, if I understand physics and I don't, but an inverted tachyon would be a photon. So, you know, a particle of light. So why is it that every solution in Star Trek is, well, we'll hit it with an inverted tachyon pulse, which to me means if an inverted tachyon's a photon, wouldn't an inverted tachyon pulse would just be the Enterprise shows up, flashes its high beams, and the wormhole collapses?
This is one of those ex machina things where just... You know, it's whatever the... You know, reverse the polarity of something, and that'll solve the problem.
There was one episode where they talked about they had this like computer thing that they had to do. Like, oh, how did you solve it? Well, you see, what I did was I induced a cascade failure by overpowering the voltage and then forcing the computer to do an involuntary reboot cycle. Oh, you turned it off.
So,
yeah, well, you hit reset. Well done.
Now that we've complained for a little while, I want to know. How do you compare season 2 to season 1?
Better. I think it's hands down better.
I think they're moving in the right direction. I liked Discovery season 1 because it felt like Trek and it was problematic. Season 2 is still problematic, but it still feels like Trek. Except for those times where it felt like Doctor Who, because the Red Angel, certainly not my favorite storyline. But
I like the stories in between.
They got a lot of the little things right, and the little side plots that we saw.
Like, I love that the when we found Tig Notaro, I loved the community that the Red Angel had transported.
When we go back to Saru's planet,
yeah,
and they have to deal with those predators, and he meets his sister, and they go through that. But he's been gone what, a week? 2-3 weeks?
I don't know. It's
and all of a sudden, I ran into this guy while he was getting the Klingon defense fleet to show up with their ARC ship, and I'm a trained jet fighter pilot now, and we managed to borrow this other race's jet fighters, and all of us are now jet fighter pilots, and we're here to help you too. Look, we brought our fleet. What? You've been gone a week.
Yeah, hard to tell time.
And you know what? I don't think we even need your fleet, because apparently we have like 600 shuttlecraft sitting down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Hand wavy. SOD.
And we're going to continue to go into the future even though Control has just been defeated and there's no reason for us to do it at the end of the episode anymore.
Yeah, but somebody could get the data and it's just so bloody important.
Well, this is the one big disconnect I didn't understand from that last episode. All of Control is an army of nanites inside that one. What's that Section 31 guy's name? Yeah, Leland. The army Control is the army of nanites inside Leland's body, which is aboard Discovery. They're preparing to blast Discovery like 900 years in the future to get away from Control, and Control is aboard their ship, and they know it, and they know he's there, and they. You know, and when they jump, you know, that army of nanites is still there in that chamber, magnetized to the floor, quote. Why didn't they just flush him out an airlock? Why didn't they? Oh, hold on, we can't jump yet. We got to kill Leland. All right, he's dead. All right, now let's move forward. Mm-hmm. No, they completely seem to forget that he was aboard their bloody ship.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just unfortunately, I have to say, it felt like the writing for this series just came last.
Yes.
And it's such a shame because they hit every other nail on the head.
Mm-hmm. It's not perfect, but remember how we rated season one and we all think that this is better than season yep. one. So it's because we love it that we talk this mm-hmm. way.
Yes. I would count myself as a fan of the show. There's no way I'm missing season three. I'm definitely going to be watching it because I think if this keeps going in the direction it's going, it's going to turn out to be something quite fantastic. Yeah. But I think it's still worth
nitpicking.
You know, well, if the writers are listening to this, and I'm sure they are.
Sure they are.
They need to have these things brought to their attention because these are some pretty egregious things that they've done.
And we can say that we love this with these flaws.
So we'll start with you, Mark. What's your wish for season three?
Now, season three I'm kind of worried about because they're going far, far into the future.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take a big jump forward or a big jump back, you're kind of suffering from the same things. You're suffering from this continuity problem. You know, with the prequels, you have to adhere to the continuity, and at the very best, you're going to reveal things that the audience already knows because they've watched the series in the present, or you're going to break canon, which people, the nerdy culture of Star Trek, they don't like that, and it takes you out of the universe. Now, I would like it if they would address this whole split timeline thing. It would be really great. I think that would be awesome. I'm worried that they're gonna go into the future and they're gonna say, oh look, everything's gone, everything's destroyed. Oh well, crap. Well, that's gonna kind of take the air out of the other series that are going on, like Picard and I think Lower Decks is another series they're starting,
mm-hmm. and well, a bunch of other ones. No, if everything's dead, then they failed.
Well, yeah, exactly. So, and you're gonna start setting up. You're gonna have to address the payoffs of everything because you're gonna see where everything goes. It would be nice if they found themselves in the current. They just brought everything back to the current timeline, and maybe they say, "Oh, we have to get away." So, you know, we've all seemed to have forgotten that the whole Gamma Quadrant just opened up at the end of DS9. There's so much more in this universe to explore in the quote unquote present, if you were, or the time that Picard is going to be taking place in.
Yeah, at the end of the Dominion War, there's so much that they can do. You know, and Voyager proved it. They did an entire six, seven seasons,
mm-hmm.
Off in another side of the universe in the present time, and you know they got turned into salamanders, and we have to ignore that now. But no, you're right. There's so much to do without having to do all this crazy jumping forwards and back.
You know, maybe that could be where they end up. They could just end up somewhere, maybe in the far flung future, but somewhere very distant,
mm-hmm.
another galaxy, maybe.
Yeah,
just something completely disconnected from
another space,
the universe another that time. We all know and love.
So how about you, Nutty? What's your wish for season three?
I'm hoping for like a clean slate. I'm hoping for them not to be the most amazing thing in the universe because. I can't imagine that 950 years there aren't advances even beyond theirs. So I kind of like the idea of them being the underdogs, and I really want to see a full crew. I want to see more of the other characters. I don't want it to be the Michael Burnham show. I know that we're going to have to resolve some things with her mother and everything else, but. Yeah, let's have like an actual crew. Let's have them as underdogs and let's see what happens. And if they come a little closer in time, like even if they just go to the 24th century, you know, or not the 24th, the 26th century, yeah. You know, where the doctor's thingy came from.
Right.
I'd be fine with that.
So my wish is not going to come true, mm-hmm. but you know, we talk a lot about, you know, what is and what isn't Trek. And the thing that made Star Trek really good for me was the episodic format, where every episode, you know, barring two-parters and that seven-parter in DS9, that it was a, you know, 44 minutes with a resolution at the end, and it was a monster of the week. You know, there was a running narrative through the TV show, and there was, you know, developments that would happen, but generally each episode was, you know, stood on its own. And I'd like to see a return to that for a season or two, and then, you know, bring back a mini series, or, you know, you want to do like a 3-4 story arc to sort of end the season, fine, but the, you know, a 24 episode Monster of the Week season, I think would be, would bring it back to Star Trek and would stop a lot of the problems that we're seeing with the writing. I think if they just had to write a bunch of stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that's Trek.
Yeah. Sit down and plan out the season ahead of time.
Yeah.
You know, do, or heck, you know, go full Babylon 5 over the next 4 or 5 seasons if you have to. But,
plan out like a 5-year arc.
Yeah, there were so many setups I found in the second season that never paid off. They mentioned that the Enterprise failed for some reason, some mysterious reason, but they never investigate it and they never tell us why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they tell us that you know, Spock being framed for murder, there was no reason for it. Why did that happen? There's no payoff for it. Yeah. They mentioned Spock's had dyslexia at one point.
Yeah.
But that's never mentioned again. Like, why mention things like this if they're not going to have some kind of callback or payoff?
I know that it goes back to the crummy writing, but I'll tell you the one thing that sort of really sort of boggled my mind is I can find no reason in the portrayal of Amanda to understand why she's with Sarek. I do not get the relationship. I do not get her going to Vulcan. I do not get her being the ambassador's wife. I understand her affection for her children, and, you know, that is portrayed very well. You know, she very much deeply cares for Michael and deeply cares for Spock and has their best interests in mind. But the relationship between her and Sarek, I see none of it.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't really bother me too much because I never quite understood Sarek and his women either. But the women always seemed devoted and he was just like, yeah, they're there.
Look, with Ponfar, it's only happening once every 7 years. But man, when it happens once every 7 years, you know it's amazing.
Well, I wonder if he's with
the alternate universe has nothing on it.
I wonder if he's with human women. Like, maybe they've figured something else out.
Yeah, the alternate universe Vulcans, it only stops once every 7 years. It's just a continuous orgy on Vulcan.
Exactly. So I did look up Sybok, by the way.
Yes.
He's older than Spock. Sarek had, like, I don't know, an affair, or he was married. It all depends on which interpretation, to a Vulcan princess.
Mm-hmm.
And she died, like, very close to Spock being born. So, like, Sybok should totally be there. And so more fuel to our, this doesn't make sense. And I never hear anyone talking about that.
We're going to get the ratings?
Maybe it only happened in the Prime Universe.
So yeah.
Another bit of headcanon that I have is that Spock didn't have a sister in the Prime Universe. He had a brother instead.
Yeah, there you go. So, I think I'm going to rate this. I don't even remember what I rated it last time. I'm sure my listeners will be like, but you rated it this last time. I like it better than season one. So, I don't know, 9 out of 10?
9 out of 10. Ooh, we're going heavy.
Well, I think I gave it an 8 out of 10 last time. I'm not sure. So.
Did you?
Yeah.
This is...
I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I rated it low, I think. I think I was around the middle, like a 6 or something.
I don't remember what you rated it, but I do remember it was higher than 5, and I do remember that you then rated your series in order.
Yes.
And it was pretty high, so...
Yeah, so this is a season 2 is a 7 out of 10 for me.
Mm-hmm.
There and the 3 missing points are inconsistent writing.
Mm-hmm.
That they, which is a Star Trek tradition now that we've, you know, while we're there, but there's so much for me to love in the characters, in the comedy, in the drama, in the action, in the special effects, in the fact that it feels like it's a part of the universe. Oh, another thing that they never explained: why are their uniforms different on Discovery than the rest of the fleet?
Well, they mention, oh, you have the new uniforms. They're colorful. But other than that, that's
yeah.
it.
Anyway.
So, Cabot, what is your rating for season 2?
I'm going to give it a 6.5, bearing in mind anything above a 5 is usually what I'll keep watching. But below a 5, you know.
So on our scale, 5 is average. So
5 is average? Okay. Yeah. So
give me a second. I'm going to read you what we have a scale. and
we totally ripped this
yeah,
off. I think I remember you describing this on a recent podcast.
Yes,
actually,
I think we described it on the last one that we did, and we totally took this from Technologic.
Yeah, it is important that we mention our scale and where the numbers come from. So this is from Technologic, and the numbers mean
so 0 is horrifying, 1 is dreadful, 2 is tedious, 3 is boring, 4 is mediocre, 5 is average, 6 is solid, 7 is exceptional, 8 is dazzling, and 9 is penultimate. 10 is sublime.
Okay. I think I would stick with a 7. And the reason being is, you know, the writing is egregious, but the acting and the performing and the set pieces and the effects and all that stuff, it's just so overwhelmingly positive that it kind of balances it back up to a 7. I'll definitely, if the writing improves, this could be one of the best Star Trek series ever made.
We reviewed a movie at a live panel that we did at Balticon one year, and I gave the movie a 3 out of 10.
No, I think it was actually not even that low. Where is it? You gave it, yeah, you're right, you gave it a 3 out of 10.
I give it a 3 out of 10.
I gave it a 5.
And a lot of the people, and this is a highly popular anime movie, Princess Mononoke, so the people who showed up in the audience were there because they were fans, and they showed up in costume, and they were giving out candy, and this one little girl must have been about 13 or so. There were two of them in the audience.
She
one of them
stomped out.
No, when I gave it, no, during a debate at one point before we got to the ratings, I went and I mentioned how I didn't like how the movie ended. And this young woman gets up to, she was about 16 or so, to defend her point and goes against
like
me.
She was like 14.
But
or
she's,
12.
She's shaking in anger. And her mom is tapping her on the hand going, you go girl, you go girl, you go, as she's just telling me off because she does not agree with the fact that I don't like the movie. When I give it a 3 out of 10 and I say the movie was just bad because it didn't end, it stopped, and I didn't like it at all. The little girl, the other one, goes bright, bright red, stands up in a huff, stomps her foot, and runs out of the room.
Yeah.
So since then, it's like we've had to explain our ratings.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's
because there is a big problem with most rating scales where, you know, anybody who rates things out of 10, what they really mean is they rate everything from 7 to 9.
Yeah, right.
It's like the it's like if you go to Amazon or eBay or something and you've got a 5-star review.
Yeah.
It's 5 is I got the product I wanted, 4 is I got it and I'm not happy with it, and 1 is something completely unrelated but the shipping was late and I'm really upset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Cabot, for you, how do you rate the different, in order of favorite to least favorite, rank your Star Trek series? And I'm
don't worry about movies,
just series.
Okay, all right, hold on. Let me think about this. At the bottom, the very worst, I'm going to say is Voyager.
Voyager's worse than the animated series?
Oh, I didn't see the animated series.
Oh, okay, so we won't count that one.
No, I can't count that one because I actually haven't seen it. I've heard
it's on
it was
Netflix.
Bad, so
it's on Netflix.
What's that?
It's on Netflix.
Yeah, I know. I just heard how bad it was, and I don't want to invest my time into it, but maybe I should.
Put it this way, because I know of another series that you have watched of the same caliber.
Okay.
It's just like Rocket Robin Hood.
Okay. That's not good.
That's not praise.
Okay, so Voyager's at the bottom.
Okay, Voyager's at the bottom, and mostly my disappointment of Voyager is in what it could have been. Mm-hmm. I would have to say DS9 is probably still at my most favorite.
Oh, okay.
Falling behind DS9 would be TNG. Below that would be Enterprise. So I would put it probably above Enterprise early seasons, and not what Enterprise could have been, and just behind TNG, and I know that I'm rating TNG where it is because of nostalgia.
I think your and Tech's line up on your top three, right?
Yeah, DS9's still at the top.
Yeah, I think you went DS9, TNG, Disco.
Disco, yep.
That's what Kevin just did.
Yep.
And then the only thing different is your bottoms.
It's still problematic. What's wrong with my bottom?
Your bottom is fine, but your least favorite Star Trek is Enterprise.
The bottom of the list, right? Gotcha.
Well, animated series then Enterprise,
but right. But I have problems with the show, but I still like it, and it's the problems I have with Disco. I have way more problems with Voyager. And TOS, the original series is not bad. It's just very, very dated. And the problems I have with it are because of the cinematography and the writing style and everything they had to do to get it on the air in the 60s. And it just doesn't make it... You can watch it with nostalgia glasses, and like those 30 good episodes sometimes are really fun to watch. But it's certainly not going to sit down on my couch and mainline the original series.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and my introduction to the original series was quite late. I watched it after The Next Generation, so.
Yeah. But I mean, if I've got nothing else to do and you know, I turn on Netflix, you know, I'll watch an episode of Next Gen. I'll watch an episode of DS9.
Yeah, but I won't watch an episode of Voyager.
No, we went and did a Voyager rewatch a couple years ago just because I don't remember the end. I didn't remember the end, so I went and rewatched all seven. Was it seven, six or seven seasons? Anyway.
I think it's seven.
Yeah, I went and watched the whole thing, even the Salamanders.
Ugh. That's brutal.
That show starts to hurt after.
But that's the thing. Like, for all of our complaints, we're all still rating Disco pretty high.
And when I rate Disco against Enterprise, I'm rating against the first two seasons of Enterprise, to be fair.
Yeah. Because you know what it is? If this show wasn't good, I wouldn't have watched it, and I wouldn't be, I wouldn't be spending my Sunday evening talking about it. I just wouldn't watch it. Yeah. There's more than enough shows out there that either do not interest me or I do not like and will not review.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you guys ever plan on doing a review of the final season of Game of Thrones?
I've done that Beyond the Wall.
Oh, I suppose that's why that is exactly where it would happen. I don't have a subscription to that. Oh. I should go listen
to that.
You should go listen to that. It's pretty good.
Tech stopped stop watching Game of Thrones around the Theon torture. And that's 100% fine.
Yeah, it stopped being fun in about season two when it was just egregious torture porn. And it was basically let's watch people have panic attacks. Let's create panic attacks. Yeah. And it stopped being fun to watch. The casting was great. The writing was okay. I also really hated the fact that they were trying to do movies on a TV budget. Mm. And they were doing things like, oh, Battle of the Blackwater, thousands of ships and tens of thousands of soldiers. There's 30 people beating on a wall.
And no one needs to write in to tell Tech about, oh, but the things, this got better and this did. Don't worry, he knows all that because all the cool scenes I would play for him. And I say, okay, come here, you want to see this dragon scene. Okay, come here, you want to see this scene. Check out Daenerys with the flap flap. All right, this is awesome.
I understand what happens and I get it. It stopped being fun. Yep.
And it's not for everyone. But I have podcasted about every single episode, and you can go to specficmedia.com and find all of the archives there. And if you want to watch the raw, you can always go to Specfic Media's YouTube channel and watch us talk about it. But the only thing that's different about the YouTube version is you just see our faces. But yeah, okay. They are all there. And we're going to come back after Chooch reads the books, because he kept himself from reading the books because he wanted to be the newbie. And so now that the series is done, he can actually go back and read the books. So we're hoping to come back together and discuss a little bit of the books.
Okay.
Eventually.
Yeah, another podcast on my list.
There you go. So before we break up, I do want to ask, let's talk a little bit about Star Trek Picard. And the fact that they're actually calling it Star Trek Picard.
Well, okay.
Bring it. I can't wait.
I'm really excited for this. I really can't stand it when I hear people saying, oh, it's going to be a nostalgia. It's going to be one big nostalgia chain. Of course it is. Don't rag on this show for being all full of nostalgia. It's called Star Trek Picard.
And there's nothing wrong with the nostalgia as long as it still has substance.
Well, that's it. And you know what? I kind of like the idea of we're going to try to find where everybody landed 20 years after the fact. All of our favorite characters, they've already confirmed that Brent Spiner. The trailer the trailer confirmed that Brent Spiner was going to be in it. Yeah. Although I strongly suspect what we saw in the trailer was a holodeck recreation just because Data called him Captain. Mm-hmm.
So Riker's, who do you think the girl is?
My first reaction was lol.
That was my reaction, but I don't think I'm right either.
Yeah. My second reaction is she has something to do with the Borg. I don't know if you've seen in the trailer, there's a quick shot of guys standing on a catwalk where there's clearly Borg assimilation chambers behind them. And there's a little chalkboard that says this facility has gone 5,000 and some days without an assimilation.
Mm. Oh wow, I didn't see that.
Yeah, you have to pause it to see it, but it's there.
There's something about her look. The first thing I immediately thought of is, and I can never remember the character's name. Do you remember the episode of TNG where Tasha Yar, through some sort of a time traveling mix up, has a half Romulan daughter?
Right. Yep. Yep.
Okay. I think the girl is her daughter.
It could be, because I think there's going to be some heavily Romulan-centric things going on, because we do know that Picard moved on to help the Romulans out with rebuilding their society after the events of the last movie. And at least two of the characters that are shown in the trailer are Romulans. It could be easily mistaken as Vulcans, but pretty sure they're Romulans. So, you know, it kind of wouldn't surprise me if she had some... There's some big, heavy Romulan-heavy story there. But Seven of Nine makes an appearance, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Seven looks great.
She does. She doesn't look like she's aged. I would like them to refer to that and maybe even, you know, mention that the fact that she's still part Borg and she doesn't seem to age.
She looks less innocent. She looks like, when I say she looks weathered, I don't mean physically. Mm. I think like the character looks less naive, less innocent, less.
Well, there was definitely like a sarcastic tone that she was taking in her voice, and that's the thing. There's actual inflection and tone in her voice. You know, she's not being robotic because she's, you know, progressed beyond that in 20 years.
So I think she's reclaimed her humanity, all the goods and bads with it. There are a few other things I just wanted to mention about this real quick. It was revealed recently that the dog's name that you see Picard with, he named his dog Number One.
Yes.
Oh, which is awesome.
And you know why it's a pit bull, right?
What's that?
Do you know why it's a pit bull?
It has something to do with Patrick Stewart's love of animals and rescues.
Yeah, he's been fostering pit bulls.
Oh, is that it? Okay.
Yeah, he's absolutely fallen in love with these pit bulls that he's been fostering. And there's like videos of him that you can watch where he's just like doing the doggy talk to them. It's so weird. It's fantastic. I love it.
There is a great Patrick Stewart video that you can find
about acting.
But he's teaching you how to act, and he's teaching you how to do the quadruple take. Not the double take or the triple take, but the quadruple take. And he takes it very seriously. But the whole time is him and the cameraman, which I think, or his wife.
If he's in the treehouse, it's his wife that's filming.
Right.
Who's a jazz singer.
Right. Yeah. But they're trying not to laugh because they are stoned out of their mind.
Yeah.
it's Patrick Stewart just high as hell trying to teach you how to do this quadruple take.
Here's how I in my head I envision the first scene of Picard going. It opens up, the camera's close in on a wine glass, and you hear Picard talking to somebody who's sitting next to him, and he's talking about all the hardships that he's had, how things have been pretty rough over the past year, and he mentions the fact that I'm glad you were here.
It's the dog.
Well, hold on.
Oh, sorry.
He says, "I'm glad you were here to grow with me. I'm glad I was, you know, that you've matured so much," or he says something like, "you've matured so much in the last X number of years. But one thing I don't understand is why you're making yourself look so damn old." And it pans out, and there is Q sitting next to him, still being played by
John DeLancey.
John DeLancey.
Yeah, but he looks visibly older now. And Q just looks to him and he says, "Well," and he makes some kind of joke like, "Well, I need to keep your confidence up, don't I?"
Yeah.
Mm. Or something like that. And we discover that Q has matured in such a way where him and Picard regularly sit down and have talks. Mm. Where Q is now kind of a respectful entity, and he doesn't screw around with things anymore. But he still comes to visit Picard every now and then. And I think this will be a great way for them to get exposition out in the show.
I don't see that happening because the two actors hate each other.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Oh, they absolutely.
I guess the animosity that we saw on screen was based on the fact that they just really didn't like each other.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
But I
could totally see Q being the dog.
But I think you're right, and I think that the story of Q was so important to the story of Picard. Mm. You know, it's the first episode, it's the last episode, it was all the great episodes in between. It's the reason why we have the Borg. You know, the Q storyline is very important. So I think having it at least a nod or a mention of it in Picard, I think, would be important. I foresee a big part of the story being 25 years in the future, or 25 years later, he's still not over being Locutus. And it's either implants that are turning themselves back on that are driving the story, or it's just good old-fashioned PTSD.
So what I saw from the trailer was Picard is going to be the captain of a bunch of renegades, and I am here for it. I don't know who the girl is. I thought Lore, but I think I'm wrong. But apparently, she played Peggy Schuyler in the national tour of Hamilton.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
She's a stage actor. Cool. Yeah.
So, and she can sing. So, if we get any singing, I will be happy. And Isaac Mendez from Heroes is going to be in it as well. So, if you watched Heroes, you'll care about that.
But Tasha Yar's Romulan daughter is named Sayla.
Okay. The character that Issa Briones is playing is Dahj. D-A-H-J. So, who knows? I'm excited. I can't wait. I don't think that Patrick Stewart will disappoint us. I don't think that he would come back to Picard unless he was going to be making something good. I don't think that he would just cash in. The other thing that we got from San Diego Comic-Con is that we're getting an animated series of the Lower Decks.
Yeah, and I saw the screenshots, like the character treatments. It looks really good.
It looks really cool, and I am excited to watch that because I think, well, it would be nice to be able to say, yeah, animated series was good. And the other thing is, the way that Disco was originally, like, sold to the public was it was going to be like the Lower Decks. But instead, we just got the Burnham. Michael Burnham show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I am excited. We have lots of Star Trek coming, and that's what we thought about Star Trek. What did you think about Star Trek Discovery Season 2? What are you looking forward to for Season 3? Let us know. You can get all the links at the end of the show. But before we sign off, we do want to thank our patrons that bring you 2 episodes a month. And so we want to thank Jax, Jason, Mark Cabot, Mark the Encaffeinated One, Susanna, Andy, you'll be hearing him soon, Shane,
hi Shane.
Radical Geek, Justine, Mike, Stephen, Kinsey, Ken, Greg, Patrick, Will, Rich, Ian, Harold, Melissa, Lynette, Susan, Zachman, and Dagny. Thank you so much, everyone. Your support really, really helps us, and especially right now, which I will not go into. But thank you, everyone, for keeping us out on the air, in your podcatcher, and in your ears. Keep on trekking. Bye.
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 Yes. Yes. This will work perfectly. We'll add a little audio here. We'll watch a movie here. We'll record here. Yes. It's alive! Alive!
No, it's not alive. It's just the Horror Fest.
It's
just the podcast Horror Fest at TalkNerdyToMePodcast.com.
But it is horrifying and spooky.
Well, yeah, 31 days of podcast is horrifying, but the movies are definitely up for debate, which they can do at Facebook.com/NerdyToMe.
And
the promo. Nope, you're done.
This is going to be in the blooper reel.
This is in the blooper reel. The blooper reel.
Do, blooper reel.
So I know we don't do skits on this show, but I just had an idea earlier for an epic skit for this. we're on a trip. We're back in Fredericton. We're going to go to the old radio station. It's like, yeah, well, who took over the tech department? Oh, you know, nobody. And there's been no tech department, and there is no tech director. And it's like, wow, so what's going on in the storage room? Open it up. Hi, guys. Mark? Oh, hey. You've been down here for like 5 years. What are you doing? Oh, can I get back on the air now, please?
Yeah, we should have maybe in the future, if Nutty wants to, we could have an homage sketch.
Yeah. Oh, hey, guys.
Hi, guys.
Where have you been? Well, I dropped my lightsaber through the floor, and I've been following it down into the sub-basements. And
that thing just keeps on going if you drop it pointy end first.
That was a good skit.
That was one of my favorite ones.
My TARDIS mug!
I think I still have the library of all of our episodes. I got to find a place to put that online, just for people who want to go and listen to it.
I'll talk to Nutty about that.
Yeah, yeah. If she wants to host them, I think I still have them all in MP3. They're on my NAS drive somewhere.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-NUTTY42.